Hello and welcome. Historical Significance proudly presents Loving Our Longtimers Speaker Meeting of Narcotics Anonymous. My name is Camilla, and I have the privilege and honor of serving as your chairperson. Each week, we invite speakers to share with us their personal knowledge of the origins and early history of NA, many of whom have 30 years or more clean. We are recording these historically significant speakers to better share their experience, strength, and hope with our fellowship. You can download these messages at Historical Significance website, nabyphone.com. We welcome a seventh tradition donation through PayPal to help support our website. Let's open our meeting with a moment of silence, followed by the third step prayer. Many of us have said, take my will and my life, guide me in my recovery, show me how to live. I'm very excited and looking forward to hearing our guest today. This is Jim M. from Ohio, and he has rich, rich knowledge of the history of NA, and in particular the starting of our magazine, NA Way. So, with no more further ado, welcome, Jim. Welcome.
Thank you. Thanks. My name's Jim Maddock, and my clean date is 5/29/79. I think the important thing for me to remember when I open the door and look back, which is what I do when I tell my story, is that addiction took from me everything that I valued. It took two marriages from me and two families. It took my money, my savings. It took my career, which I'd done quite well as a young man. It took even my self-esteem. And I think that was, to me, the most devastating thing. I came in through a treatment program where I went to my first several NA meetings. The NA meeting that was started by members from Eastern Pennsylvania who had moved to Western Pennsylvania, where I went through treatment, was much like what we call H&I meetings today, but it was an open speaker meeting. People told their stories. It didn't take me long to begin to relate. The first meeting that I went to was on a day that I really was disgusted with this treatment center and about to leave. You see, when I first came into treatment, they interviewed me at the intake desk, and it was really a revealing experience to me because they asked me first how long I'd been an alcoholic. And I told them that I really didn't drink all that much. I had drank quite a bit earlier in my youth, but because it made me throw up, I used other drugs that were more effective and more fun. And they had been fun for me earlier in my addiction, but they weren't much fun anymore. After a while, I realized that they had no funding for someone unless they proclaimed themselves an alcoholic. And I followed the lead of the intake person, and the next time that he asked me how long I've been an alcoholic, well, I said, well, about 25 years. I learned how to lie. And that was a main theme there. You had to follow protocol. And I learned to comply so very well that by the end of my stint there, I was voted most likely to stay sober and got to chair the final meeting the last week that I was there. A couple of very important things happened to me while I was at that treatment center. First and probably most important was that I went to that Narcotics Anonymous meeting. I don't think I heard very much my first meeting or two. I listened to the speaker and I got a frame of reference, a feeling for what they'd gone through, and it seemed very similar to what I'd gone through. I related right away. The other thing was I felt quite uncomfortable at that NA meeting. The other meetings that I went to, the AA meetings, why I got patted on the head and told that it was a great thing that somebody as young as I was coming in. It really felt like I could manipulate people. And I'd become quite good at that in my active addiction. I wanted to get clean. I wanted what the other people at the meeting had. I wanted to stop using. The words on the wall said we admitted we're powerless over alcohol. And the therapist told me I needed to change that to drugs. So I believed that what I needed to do in order to get these ideas, to get some kind of recovery, was to admit that I was powerless over drugs. And I just didn't ever see myself as powerless over inanimate objects, over stuff. Later I realized that I was powerless over my need to pick those up and put them in me. It took me 9 months going through a halfway house, working in treatment, gyrating around to meetings, going to that NA meeting once a week, the only one in driving distance. And eventually, I came to a point where I was really ready to hear. I remember that meeting very well because most of the time I would go to the meetings 2-3 minutes late after they'd started reading, and I'd walk in and make an entrance and walk up to the front of the room and sit down. But this night, I was just ready to surrender. This night I came early, I helped set up, and I sat in the back, and I was holding my head in my hands, and they went through the readings, and someone stood up and started reading how it works. And they read, "We admitted we're powerless over addiction." And it was like a cloud of understanding just descended around me. I finally knew what they'd been talking about all this time. I finally understood, and I finally found something that I could surrender to. They didn't say drugs. They said addiction, powerless over addiction. And I knew that whatever feelings and thoughts that I had that caused me to pick up those drugs and put them in me was really what I couldn't control. And from that moment, I haven't used anything. I've been clean since I accepted the first step in NA. And that's really what has motivated me for so long to be of service in the best way I know how. NA gave me something that I believe nothing else could have. people told me that if I wanted to have more meetings to go to, I needed to start them. So I started a meeting in Youngstown, Ohio, the first ongoing meeting in Ohio. There had been several started before that had started and failed, but this is the first one that started and stayed. Nobody told me that I had to wait and take a step each month or a step each year and go slow, so I worked through the steps as fast as I could. I came to believe by attending meetings, believing that you were doing the things that you said you were doing, that you had found a different way to live here in NA. And I did the third step by making a commitment to work the rest of the steps, to live this way of life, to adapt my life to the program. We have a flyer hanging up on the wall, and it said World Convention of NA. I started a meeting, and I was clean, and a lot of times I had to clench my teeth to stay clean and maybe call somebody. But I had not been to any other than the little parties that we had at my farm and around the fellowship. Why, I had not really been to any events for NA. The guy I hang around with, the guy I followed like a little puppy, he said, if it's happening for Narcotics Anonymous, I'm going to be there. And I'll take any of you with me that who want to go. His name's Bob P., and he's a neat guy. He was my first sponsor. Thing is, he never really knew he was my sponsor until he heard me tell my story. Because I never really asked him. I just asked him questions about the program and followed his advice. We went to that World Convention. It was the only convention in NA at the time, and it was in Atlanta, so it was achievable for me and members of our home group to go to. And we went down, and it was actually pretty disgusting because young people's AA folks had taken over the convention committee in their multiple meetings, and all the speakers were pounding some big book down my throat and identifying themselves in a different way than I did. I got some real good fellowship in hallways, though, because I met other people like myself. I met this guy from Memphis, Tennessee, that had a hard time getting out of his room. And I spent time with him in his room and in the hallways and a couple, three workshops. I met this big, jovial guy who'd come all the way from Oregon to Atlanta, Georgia. And he just was the friendliest, nicest guy that I'd ever met. I met a guy named Bo from Georgia. He was the chairman of the convention committee, but didn't seem like he exerted much of the knowledge that I learned that he had later over that convention. There was a workshop for literature, about NA literature. And I got a flyer there. I got a flyer just ahead of it that said, "You are the book." And that was the first of many flyers like that that I saw. We didn't have a book, and you know, when we ordered literature, why, sometimes it would take 6-8 weeks to get a small literature order, and I wondered what was going on, and I was kind of angry, and I went to that meeting, and you know, I was told that the office was run by one old guy kind of by himself, without any pay, working out of his house and his garage. And you know, I kind of got a little easier, a little less angry. And I made a decision right then that I was going to get involved in this thing called the Literature Movement. They were going to have a conference in Wichita, Kansas at the, I think that was at the next World Service Conference. And I signed up for it and made plans to go, but never made it. And I signed up for the second one that was going to be in Lincoln, Nebraska, where they decided the books were going to be built on a little white book with paragraphs of the little white book used as chapter headings for the basic text. But I didn't make it there either. But I got minutes from both of those places, and I was included in all the communication about them, both before and after, and I felt like I was a part of. I was able to make it to the next one, which was in Memphis, Tennessee, and it changed my life. I worked through the steps. I worked through steps 4 through 9 after the Atlanta Convention, where we heard for the first time, don't use, go to meetings and work the steps or die. Then they would characterize you after that. I went to Memphis, and that guy who I'd met from Memphis was the chairman that conference. His name was Joseph Proctor. He's since passed. He may have had more organizational skills than anyone I've ever met in the program. He may have had more motivational skills than anyone I've ever met in the program. And he put together a conference at Memphis State University. Got us rooms in the dormitories, got us, I don't know, 14 or 16 Selectric typewriters, which were state-of-the-art at that time, several copy machines, all the paper we needed, all the supplies that we needed, and meals on a regular basis, just a whole bunch of stuff that I would have never known. I would have never known how to do. I was a simple country boy. I didn't know those things. And I met people from all over the country, from as far away as California and as far east as Maine, as far north as Minnesota and as far south as Louisiana. People from all over the fellowship had gotten involved in the literature movement by this time. They all got those letters, you are the book, you may be the only book that anyone has ever had the opportunity to read. So share in writing what you share with other people. Share in writing what you hear at meetings that's of value to you. And people send in massive amounts of input. It filled a steamer trunk. And Bo and the folks that helped him carried that around to all the places where they went. Following Memphis, we decided, oh, well, at Memphis, we took all of that material, factored it into the headings from the little white book, and came out with the review form, the gray book. I hear people using the term, I can't remember what I was going to say right there. As you get old, you kind of weigh out sometimes. Anyway, we came up with the gray book. And in many ways, I still go back to the gray book, and I think it may well be the best thing that we ever wrote as a fellowship. Addicts writing for other addicts. It's crude, Some of the spelling's incorrect. Some of the terminology's incorrect. It kind of sounds like a meeting. It sounds like real people sharing. It feels like a meeting. It feels like real people sharing. We sent that out to the entire fellowship. At that time, there were only 600 registered groups in all of Narcotics Anonymous. And we sent it as far away as Europe and as far away as Australia and to all those registered groups, and we asked for input. If you get a chance to see a gray book, why, take a look at it, take a look at the letter that went with it, which is included in the book itself. And we asked for input, and masses of people had literature meetings in their home groups, in their areas, in their houses, and sent input in. You know, a few lines or a few pages or, you know, came themselves to the next literature conference in Santa Monica. That was really cool because, you know, we felt like we were taking new NA out to where old NA had begun. And it started in California, but it really never grew until we had a basic text. It was amazing to me. There were people at the meetings there in Southern California that didn't even know that the World Literature Conference was going on. Communication has always been both a difficult and a energy-consuming thing for us. In Santa Monica, we got a lot of work done, but there had recently been a new literature chairman elected, and that literature chairman didn't have the kind of organizational skills and detail consciousness that Bo had. And a great deal of what we did at Santa Monica was literally lost. There's been a draft of that material that may or may not, I can't verify the fact that it contains actual material that was done. Finally, the files came to the next literature conference we're going to have, which is in Warren, Ohio, and the center of activity for that was my house out in the country south of Warren. People started rolling in about a week or 10 days early, and I put them all up in a big old farmhouse. We had some campfires and some fun and talked about what we were going to do. And we got to Warren, and we got quite a bit done. We got four chapters finalized from the input. We would go through the material, bring the input and suggestions in, delete things where we were told to delete them, and add some bridge words and sentences to make the new input fit in properly. And completed chapter 1, 2, 3, and 8 there at 1. We completed the rest of the approval form of the basic text, which is essentially the basic text today, although some unauthorized changes have been made to it, some changes that really weren't subject to group conference. But I'll get into that later. We completed the rest of it in Miami, and that was right at the World Convention in Miami, and there were quite a few thrill seekers, quite a few onlookers, quite a few people that really didn't intend to work that came and sort of disrupted the conference, but we were glad to see them. They were welcome. They might stay half a day. It was, you know, it was rewarding to get the book done. And we finalized the rest of the chapters there. The one that took the most time and effort was the fourth chapter where we talked about the steps. And in my opinion, the biggest error we made is in that fourth chapter, in the first step where it says we're not only powerless over drugs, but addiction as well. And of course, we're not powerless over drugs. Nobody's powerless over drugs until they take them. Then a few months later, we got together in Memphis again. At all these literature conferences, we had worked together and made plans to go back home and make the service structure happen. When I went to my first World Service Conference in 1980, there were only four representatives, and one of them was just a guy and a gal that were making a visit to the office from New Jersey. There were only four voting representatives to represent the fellowship. In 1981, when I went out as a state representative for Ohio, there were 23 representatives because the literature movement had gotten so many more folks involved. When we sent the approval form out from Memphis in the fall of 1981, there were over 1,800 registered groups of Narcotics Anonymous. The fellowship had tripled in size in 8 months. It's never grown that fast any other time. But since the basic text has been written and gotten out to the fellowship, why this fellowship has come alive, it's realized that it had a separate identity from other recovery programs, and it's come alive. And Narcotics Anonymous now, I believe, probably serves more people in the world than any other recovery idea. At Memphis, we finalized the approval form and sent it out. And having realized that we needed to implement this service structure, we got together as the policy committee. We all joined the policy committee. Committees were open participation then. And if, in fact, you wanted to be a part of something going on, you could be a part of whatever was happening, whatever was being done. Another experienced member needed to bring you along at first, but that really was all that was required. Look in the Blue Service Manual and under the subcommittee system, and you'll see that. I believe that probably was the driving force that allowed growth in NA, that open participation, where each of us, all of us, any of us could be involved in anything that was defining Narcotics Anonymous and being written for or developed for NA. So we got together as a policy committee, redrafted the Blue Service Manual into the Green Service Manual, and it was distributed along with the approval form to all the groups of NA for a vote at the next World Service Conference. Just as a side note, at the next World Service Conference, the basic text was overwhelmingly approved by, I think, probably around 5/8 of the fellowship. That service manual, where we had intentionally modified the world service structure so that we wouldn't have the problems that the office had been giving us. They'd steadily been giving us problems, dragging their feet, telling some of us we weren't members of NA anymore. I don't know whether it was behind fear or jealousy or what, but they'd been more in the road than they had been part of a helpful part. And we modified that in the Green Service Manual, made the office finally directly responsible. It never, even though the Knights tradition was something that members who shouted from the office said that we as a fellowship needed to adhere to, they hadn't adhered to it. They were not directly responsible to anyone but themselves. However, the Green Service Manual built a program where they would be directly responsible, being controlled and directed by a subcommittee of the World Service Conference. However, what happened at the World Service Conference was that the Green Service Manual wasn't offered as a whole. The chairperson made a rogue move and, without any group conscience, only offered the first half up through the regional service explanation and didn't offer the World Service part. So everybody who had a vote from their region back home voted the way, I assume, that their region had told them to vote on the whole thing. And the Green Service Manual that was offered, the first half, passed by over a two-thirds majority. I believe the whole thing would have passed. I believe the fellowship group conference was to pass the Green Service Manual. But that isn't what happened. And that was the beginning of many such moves at the World Service Conference. Things being done out of order, things that weren't part of our guidelines happening and appearing, a whole lot of self-will. But we had a book. We had a basic text. The office was given the chore of printing the basic text in hardback and offering it to the fellowship. And there was general agreement that they would offer those books for $8 until such time as the office got on its feet, and then the price would be reduced to $4 or $4.50. Of course, that never happened either. A year later, the office finally produced for the fellowship a basic text. But they had arbitrarily and without group conscience changed the book. So it really wasn't our basic text. And they were instructed to return it to its approved form, the way the fellowship had voted approval on it. That became the second edition. It chokes me up thinking about that time and those things that happened. I hope nobody died over them. I know this, that as World Services demonstrated that they weren't going to be subject to the Second, Seventh, and Ninth Tradition, that they weren't going to be part of the spiritual principles and traditions, even though they shouted as loud as they could that we needed to follow the traditions, that many of the most dedicated, brightest, and best people in our fellowship left. They just got sick of it and went somewhere else, either to their church or to AA, or some of them just went back to their home group and never involved themselves in service. I think it's time that we rebuilt Narcotics Anonymous on the spiritual principles that have been lost. That divergence from our real guidelines, the 12 traditions, the development by an isolated group of people without open participation, no review and input of something called the concepts that were given out with a slanted view of what they were and what they represented to fellowship that was, you know, nearly all newcomers that wanted to believe that things were right when they weren't. And all the recent literature that's been written by professional writers and most of the fellowship's genuine input rejected or not even requested. I don't really think that stuff's NA. It's not of the NA that I'm a member of. And things are falling apart pretty seriously. Most of you see that. Most of you know that. It's time that we rebuild NA on the spiritual principles that we've lost. It's time that we dedicated ourselves to genuine group conscience. I don't think most groups in NA really know what a group conscience is. I don't think they realize that they need complete unbiased information because they've only been fed a certain narrative for so long, and they blindly trust in people who are basically raping them. They just don't really know. They certainly don't know what the seventh tradition's about. They think it's about money. Most of us don't have money when we first come around. So we've got a lot of creativity and a lot of ability, and closing down subcommittees, ending open participation, is the most severe and violent violation of the seventh tradition that I can imagine. And I think for most, the ninth tradition is theory. You know, because someone with a good education who's well-spoken believes they're being directly responsible doesn't mean they're being directly responsible. Direct responsibility requires questioning of those we serve. And questioning them with complete information so they can make a spiritual decision. And then following the answer that they give. Not maneuvering around so that we get the answer that we want, which is what's been happening lately. If we want real NA to survive, why, there are four things that we're going to need to reinstitute in our fellowship. The first is that this is a program of complete abstinence from all drugs. I just posted something on Facebook a couple of days ago about complete abstinence, and I've gotten tremendous negative argument from people. They just don't understand. If doctors could have helped us, they would have. The American Medical Association doesn't even accept addiction as a disease. That's an absurdity. We're supposed to have public information out there, and we changed it to relating, and we're relating with them and letting them spout their BS that's killing people. How long will we tolerate that? You know, we need to demand and instruct in a loving way the fellowship so that there can be a true group conscience. And we need to support ourselves with our own money, with our own creativity, in a way that's the lowest financial cost that we can find. And we need to be directly responsible in our own life as trusted servants and in our business meetings at our groups, and then teach our areas and regions how to do it and require that direct responsibility happens at our World Service Conference. Now, NA saved my ass, it saved my life, it gave me things that only NA could have. And I see it going, you know, I see it going down the drain. I see it circling the drain. I see it going away and not being available for those I love. Not locally. I mean, crap, our local fellowship is strong as could be. We have several meetings that read the gray book, that apply the basic principles, that sponsor each other and help each other recover in the same intimate way that I was sponsored and helped to recover. And there's many local fellowships like that. When it gets away from the locality, though, things start to diminish. And it's time that we woke up, realized it was happening, and made something good of the mess that things have become. I think there are people that are trying to do it, but they're trying to do it in different directions and different ways. And I plead with all of you to help me find a way to bring everything together so that the spiritual principles that we have lost guide us into a new generation of NA. Thanks for listening. I hope you're not discouraged by this, because there's more hope in it than there is negative. I love y'all. Good night.
Thank you, Jim. Thank you so very much.
You're very welcome.
I really got a lot out of that. We have a few questions we ask all of our speakers. Are you game to take a stab at those?
Sure.
Do you have a sponsor?
Yep.
How often do you talk to your sponsor?
Oh, between two or three times a week and two or three times a month, depending on what's going on.
Great, great. How many meetings do you go to in a week?
Usually three.
All right. Hear that, everybody? 36 years clean and still doing lots and lots of meetings.
Well,
how
it's
many?
35. It's
35.
35.
My apologies. But still, an awesome number. You just had an anniversary a month ago. I guess I was adding the wrong way. But
yep.
That's marvelous. That's marvelous. Do you still sit down with pen and paper and write the steps? How many times have you worked the steps? It's a two question.
I've worked through the steps several times, but writing the steps is unique to certain folks. It's not something that's really Narcotics Anonymous. I mean, writing the fourth step, of course, is. Writing an eighth step, of course, is. But, you know, and my sponsor wrote a book that suggested folks write their first three out before they do four, which that's just fine, but and I did that with him. However, I didn't do it the two times before that I worked for. So writing, where does it say in the steps, write this?
True.
Yeah, doesn't say. My step working guide is the first paragraph of the fifth chapter of the basic text.
Okay. Thank you for that. And this is Brian's favorite question. How many times have you hopped in a car with a bunch of other people and a wing and a prayer and 21 cents in your pocket to drive many miles to support an NA function?
I couldn't count them, but I, like you, have always been lucky and had work that would support my NA habit.
Well, I have it always, but I have had recently, and I'm very grateful that I have. Believe me about that.
Well, I haven't always either, but I do now.
We get better, and we get better able to take care of ourselves the longer we stick around. Jim, would you explain for us, for those who don't know, what a true group conscience is? So many people have heard about, you know, Robert's rules and making motions, the two cons, the two pros. And I don't think some people, especially the newcomers, really know what a group conscience is. Can you explain it for us?
Sure. In my experience, when a group has a question to answer or a problem to solve, a true group conscience is developed by the leaders or the people in responsibility at the group phrasing the question so it's easy to understand, finding and sharing all the pertinent information that would help folks make a decision one way or another, or modify that decision, then each of us, each of the members, taking the time to pray and meditate, seek the will of their higher power, add that with their experience in recovery, and the clear opportunities on both sides of the question, and take a position, a yay or a nay. My experience is that many questions aren't answered right away. They may take time, and most questions probably need to be periodically revisited because we may learn more or our spiritual condition may change. And to me, group conscience is following that sort of a decision-making procedure as a group.
Do you feel that a simple, you said a yay or a nay, is 51% enough, 2/3, 3/4, 100%? Is there a set number?
Each group should decide for itself, but my take on it is that a good 2/3 majority or better needs to be in favor of something for the question to be probably answered. And again, if we revisit it as we learn and grow, why, if we made a mistake, we can correct it.
Yes, I agree with that completely too. You know, we make the best choice that we can, and if it turns out that it's not the best choice, we simply choose again.
Absolutely.
Simply choose again. So, it has been so awesome having you here with us. Thank you very much, Jim. I really appreciate it.
Well, you're very welcome. It's kind of hard to give a talk without looking at anybody, but
you did a very, very good job. So.
Well, I didn't say that to get a compliment. I hope people
I didn't,
aren't.
I think you gave us some very interesting perspectives that we need to hear. You know, you stated very clearly, you know, that we need to reevaluate and take a look at what's going on in our service structure. And that's so very important.
Yep. Well, it's a burr under my saddle. I need to get it out and get the itch scratched.
Well, Thank you so much for sharing your unique insights with us. It has truly been a pleasure having you with us.
Thank you. Thanks for the opportunity.
You're welcome. Remember, my friends, you can download all of our former speakers, make a Seventh Tradition donation, and get teleconference meeting schedules and other phone meeting info at Historical Significance website, nabyphone.com. That's N-A-B-Y phone, T-H-O-N-E.com. Let's close with Just for Today. Tell yourself, just for today, my thoughts will be on my recovery, living and enjoying life without the use of drugs. Just for today, I will have faith in someone in NA who believes in me and wants to help me in my recovery. Just for today, I will have a program. I will try to follow it to the best of my ability. Just for today, through NA, I will try to get a better perspective on my life. Just for today, I will be unafraid. My thoughts will be on my new associations, people who are not using and who have found a new way of life. So long as I follow that way, I have nothing to fear. Just for today.